Union and the All African People's Revolutionary Party, speaking about organizing for Pan-Africanism in Gambia and throughout Africa. Again, that's a message from the Women of Gambia, a part of the Pan-African Film Festival, Wednesday, May 18th at 6 p.m. at the Smith Student Union Room 333 at PSU, 1826 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Two or three hours after I left church, I heard this noise, and they were saying, the dike has broken.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Vanport Mosaic Festival, May 27th through May 30th, celebrating the preservation of the history of Vanport and its residents. The Vanport Mosaic Festival is 4 days of art, culture, historical exhibits, lectures, and tours that will engage audiences in a deeper understanding of this chapter in Portland's history. This includes screenings of short documentary films, performances of Cottonwood in the Flood, and much, much more. Again, the Vanport Mosaic Festival is May 27th through May 30th, celebrating the preservation of the history of Vanport and its residents, taking place all over the Portland metro area. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver, out in your cab alone. To you, waiting for lunch break, as the minutes drag so slow. Take courage, turn the volume up, it's Labor Radio.
Time is now 6:01 p.m. You're listening to KBOO 90.7 FM. This is Labor Radio. I'm your host, Nick Bubb. With me is...
Michael Cathcart, as always.
As always. And tonight we have a repeat guest.
Michael Brassell.
Welcome back, Michael. How are you tonight?
I'm doing awesome.
Fantastic. So we got some fun things to talk about tonight. We're going to talk about an update on the Verizon strike. There's 39,000 workers still off work right now. We're also going to talk about Respect Portland. This is some housing projects. That's where Michael comes in. And we're going to talk about something near and dear to my heart, a little Bernie Sanders. So let's talk a little bit about Verizon. We got 39,000 workers that are trying to not take concessions. That seems reasonable. I mean, who wants to take a cut? Verizon's making $1 billion. Yeah. Well, I went to the CWA side. That's Communication Workers of America. That's the union that covers these guys. So... Verizon has outsourced some jobs to the Philippines. They got some call center action going on there. It's pretty common. Every time you call anywhere, you're talking to somebody offshore, as it seems like.
Oh, yeah. We've all experienced that.
Yeah. Well, Verizon's downplaying it. They're saying, yeah, we got a minimal number of people out there. So CWA says, you know what? We're going to send 4 people to the Philippines. We're going to visit this call center, and we're going to see what's going on. And this is all on the CWA website. They said they got there, and this place is packed out. Like, this is a full house, like, kind of call center. They're talking to the people there. They're making $1.78 U.S. per hour. They're forced to work overtime, and they don't get any additional compensation for the overtime. They're just getting a straight $1.78 an hour. That's it. And Verizon makes billions.
That's disgusting.
No kidding. That's what I'm thinking. So these guys are like, you know what? We gotta do something about this. Let's try and dig a little bit deeper. So they start talking to some of the call center folks some more. Management gets wind of it. Verizon calls in private security. Now you're thinking, okay, Paul Blart shows up to escort them out. No, they're saying it's like SWAT team. Fully automatic weapons. Like, come in. Like, hey, you're out of here. That's got to be terrifying.
I mean, that's especially going to... what is ostensibly owned by your own company in a foreign land, and having them pull, you know, have American contractor,
yeah,
you know, come out with guns and
yeah,
kick you out of there.
That's crazy to think of. I mean, like, people are barely comfortable with the idea of police having this power.
Yeah.
And now we're talking about a private corporation having the same power, and they get away with it because they move it, you know, offshores. And if, I mean, think about how much clout they have here with their billions of dollars.
Yeah.
You know, we talk about them buying elections. We talk about them lobbying for pretty much anything they want. Imagine what it's like in a place like the Philippines, where a person's making $1.78 an hour and they can roll in there with the same $1 billion.
Well, what gets me about this whole situation is that most of our pensions are invested in a portfolio that's kind of spread out. We have different investment risk categories.
Yeah.
And one of them is a high risk category. There's medium risk and there's low risk investment categories. Do you think that we honestly don't have Verizon stocks in our pensions? Right?
You know what? I bet you we have no idea what stocks we have in our pensions. I've got some money in a mutual fund through my bank, right? I have no idea what that's invested in.
Right?
Not a clue. I could have Verizon stock. I could have, you know, maybe I own a portion of like Trump hotels. That wouldn't that be horrible?
Sure,
I have no idea.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Trump stakes, you know?
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, that's something where we could have some clout. I mean, if they dug into that, you know, deep enough, if all the unions banded together and they're like, hey, let's take a look what's really in our pension funds. And if they don't want to play ball, then we're not going to play ball with them. And we're going to take our money and invest it with somebody that wants to play ball with us, because it should be a symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. I mean, that's a divestment movement starting right there.
Yeah. And we've got billions of dollars in capital invested in these funds that have stocks. You know, they're companies that are doing things to oppress workers all across the world, mm-hmm. you know? And what really gets me is that like our union, like my union, for example, endorsed Hillary Clinton. You know, Hillary Clinton.
Yes. ours did too.
Right? And when you challenge them on this, they're like, well, we think, you know, she's gonna represent our interest. Well, you know, we know that the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement doesn't represent our interest.
It does not.
We know that offshoring, you know, the workers' money and, you know, bank accounts in Panama doesn't represent the workers' interest.
It does not.
We know that investing in companies that oppress workers worldwide does not represent our interest.
Yeah. No, it doesn't. I mean, this is the kind of stuff that we should all be standing together on. You know, it's... So in the Carpenters Union, I'm sure you guys have a no strike clause in the contract.
Yeah.
Because we do too. And so unless the, you know, the contractor violates the contract, we can't strike. I mean, it's forbidden. I mean, at best, maybe you could get a bunch of people to call in sick at the same time. But then, you know, if they get wind that that's even promoted, it becomes illegal. That's a contractual violation then. But the problem is I negotiate for my contract in a certain year, in a certain month. You probably don't have the same year and month. The electricians probably don't have the same year and month. You know, sheet metal's got something different. Ironworkers got something different. So if one of us goes on strike, nobody else can really legally honor that strike. And I think that's a big problem.
We got three contract jurisdictions in my local hall alone that have different contract schedules.
I'm sure that's not an accident either, you know?
No, I'm sure it's not. Wow. Ours, so we've got different classifications, but they're all negotiated at the same time.
Well, that'd be great.
Yeah. Wow. But I think even bigger, even more important would be get all of us on the same page at the same time. And that way, if one person needs to strike, everybody can. I mean, that's unions putting collective pressure.
Damn right. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
And, you know, I believe that would really bring them to a much more fair bargaining table, a much more equal bargaining table, instead of somebody that's got all the money versus somebody that's got most of the skilled labor.
Well, we've been told for a long time that that all unions are, that and all that we should fight for is wages, hours, all and working conditions. For is wages, but, you know, when unions started, we fought for land, for the benefits of our land, for the benefits of our labor, and the benefits of our leisure, so that we could determine our working conditions, we could determine our living conditions, we could determine how capital was used to determine the community. You know, we used to have workers in our community all the time. We used to have workers, you know, and a lot of that stuff is really gone away, and a lot of that stuff is really just gone away. Business unionism for the second that, you know, this is a very limited perspective on this is a very limited perspective on how you fight for.
Yeah, right. And then if the members want to go above and beyond that, sometimes they have to fight their own leadership, fight their own, not just employers. It's not mind-boggling.
Well, you know, the case of solidarity strikes, that's apparent, particularly. You know, we were told we could apparently stand in solidarity. You know, we were told we could stand in solidarity with drywall workers. And we had people
people trying to dump trucks into the concrete.
You know,
I'm all for the plan of, you know, the government leadership, you know, the government governments, the way the private organizations, 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 the way the private organizations,
I don't get why they do it that way. It just doesn't make any sense. And I've read that Congress will actually, if they do one term, they'll get their salary for life and a pension. Their idea behind it is that, well, the money shouldn't be our motivation to stay in office.
But then, of course, we allow all unlimited campaign financing, and we allow, you know, the revolving door between regulators and industry, and so it essentially negates that right there.
Oh, well, sure.
They get on average a 1,500% increase in pay when they become lobbyists.
Yep.
Yeah.
So money isn't an issue.
That needs to be illegal, too. Yeah. When they're the revolving door between Congress and being lobbyists, that's not a good thing.
I mean, that should go hand in hand with paying them their salary for the rest of their life, that they mm-hmm. They're not allowed to engage in anything that they were once regulating.
Well, let's talk a little bit about Bernie then, because he's sort of, he's sort of the man of the people is combating this mm-hmm. this kind of problem. And we've got a caller on the phone that wants to talk some Bernie with us. Rand, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hey, right. Good evening. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Excited about tomorrow.
I am too. Did you turn your ballot in already?
I wish I could vote twice.
Don't we all? By the way, if you're listening out there and you want to turn your ballot in, it's too late to mail it. They don't honor the postmark. They have to have it in hand tomorrow, so you can't mail it at this point. You got to drive it to a box. You can check online where these are. Usually they're like at your local library. And you got to hand deliver it to them because you won't get counted if you mail it in at this point.
Yeah, they put up a lot of signs. I mean, there's boxes all over town, so it should be pretty easy to find.
So, Rand Wilson, you're with Labor for Bernie nationally?
Well, yes, I'm a volunteer, and I've been helping to coordinate it. Labor for Bernie isn't really an organization. It's just a movement.
Great.
And it's supported by the 6 national unions that have endorsed Bernie Sanders, by over 110 local unions around the country that have endorsed Bernie Sanders, and then by tens of thousands of union members who have endorsed Bernie Sanders and are working for him and are part of this movement, Labor for Bernie.
That's fantastic.
Pretty exciting.
And I'll tell you what else. I mean, you said there's six national unions that have endorsed him, but the hearts and minds of the rank and file of so many more unions have endorsed Bernie. I know in my own case, we risk losing funding and backlash from our international if we go against their desire of endorsing Hillary. So, but I mean, I can tell you that in the hearts and mind of people, we support Bernie Sanders.
Of course. I mean, you know, if you have union principles, if you have any kind of class consciousness at all, you realize that this guy is a fighter for working families, for working people. And, you know, you might not agree with him on everything, but Bernie Sanders doesn't have his finger in the air to figure out which way the wind is blowing.
Yeah.
You know, he's been saying the same thing for 30 years. He's got incredible integrity and credibility.
Yep.
So a lot of people I know, you know, they might get hung up on, oh, he's a socialist, or, you know, oh, God, he wants to help the immigrants or something like that.
Yes.
But if you look at the big picture, you realize this is a guy you can identify with. He's going to help us out. He's going to stand for working people. And you know, just a real credible candidate. And something like a breath of fresh air. We haven't had somebody like this in decades.
You know, I love the meme that's going around, this Franklin Delano Roosevelt. It shows him, and it says, the last socialist we had in office was so popular, he died in office, and they had to enact term limits after that because he was so popular.
So what's your perspective?
I haven't seen that one, but that's great.
So what's your perspective on what happened in Nevada?
Yeah, did happen in Nevada?
Well, I don't know much more than you guys. I just watched some videos on Facebook and, you know, read a few accounts of it. And, you know, it sounds like an orchestrated attempt to try to get back what they lost. You know, they felt like they won there, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then the Sanders people turned it around in subsequent state party meetings and county meetings. And then when they had this thing, they changed the rules. And as a delegate to the National Democratic Convention in Philadelphia in July, you know, this is really a heads up for me and for the rest of us that are going to be going to Philly, that we need to be on our toes. These people will do anything, you know, and they'll stoop to any level. So, you know, I'm prepared to fight for democracy and to fight for Bernie Sanders.
I wish I could say I was still surprised. I mean, this stuff just... It's just more of the same that we keep getting. The stuff like in Nevada, we hear all about, you know, the elections fraud, and 125,000 voters from Brooklyn in New York being deregistered just days before the election. I mean, that doesn't make any sense, except for it makes perfect sense if, you know, you're in the other camp.
Yeah. What about Arizona, where they you know, limited the number of polling places and people had to wait 4, 5, 6 hours to vote? Come on.
What about in Wyoming, where he won the delegates, he won the election, but didn't actually get the full delegate count? I mean,
it's
time and again.
Yeah, I've got a question for you then, because you said you're going back to the convention in Philly. If there's Bernie supporters out there, but they're not delegates, but they're like, you know what, I would love to see a piece of history. A, are they welcome at the convention? And B, is there a way they could help Bernie by being there?
Listen. I haven't seen anything official, but the real action is not going to be inside the convention. Mm-hmm. It's going to be outside the convention.
Mm-hmm.
And everybody is welcome to come to Philly.
There it is.
I've been hearing rumors about a Sunday afternoon rally at the start of the convention. I've heard other rumors about a Wednesday rally at the convention in the last week of July in Philadelphia. And I think, you know, I was elected a delegate from my congressional district. I know there's thousands of other people that are supporting Bernie going to be on the inside, but there'll be tens of thousands of people on the outside, and that will shape the dialogue and shape the issues that are going to be fought for on the convention floor. Mm. Is when we have huge crowds of people supporting Bernie Sanders, and just as importantly, supporting his platform for real change and for dealing with inequality, climate change, education, healthcare. And jobs.
Yeah, it will be hard for superdelegates to make any kind of case in favor of Hillary Clinton if you have tens of thousands of people right outside the doors, not letting it up, you know, keeping the message strong.
It's a long ways from Oregon, but I think there'll also be, you know, opportunities for people at the local level to show their support either through social media or maybe local rallies. let's get ready for the last week in July. Start mobilizing, whether you're coming to Philly or whether you're going to, you know, be active in your own community. We all need to support Bernie Sanders as he goes into that convention, and support the delegates that are going to be there. But more importantly, we got to finish the job in Oregon tonight and tomorrow.
Yes.
Make sure that everybody votes. This is so important.
Yes.
You know, people think their vote doesn't matter. Every single vote counts.
Yes.
Every single delegate we send to the convention counts. Mm-hmm. You know, this really matters because we're in a fight for the future of this country. And, you know, as Bernie says, for a future to believe in. Mm-hmm. And in my lifetime, I've never seen a political uprising like this one.
No. I haven't
about
either.
Time.
I haven't either. And, you know, I mean, like, so what are we doing with the super delegates? Like, Governor Brown has announced that she will cast her vote for Hillary Clinton regardless. It doesn't matter. Suppose 70% of Oregonians, 75, maybe 80%. You know, it's hard to tell until they count this stuff up. She says, nope, voters, you're all wrong. I'm voting for Hillary Clinton with my super delegate vote. What's being done to address that?
Well, Bernie's talked a lot about, you know, the fact that, you know, he's probably much more electable in a competition with Trump than she is.
Absolutely.
And, you know, less tainted. And so, you know, that's an issue about values. Mm-hmm. And I guess the other thing, though, is, you know, if this is a person who's got who's in an elected office, you know, maybe we need to remember in November.
yeah, exactly.
You know, they need to be held accountable. And honestly, we need a change in the Democratic Party rules.
Yeah, we do.
That allows these elite, unelected people to control the nomination.
So,
and, you know, I'm a populist, and I think the Democratic Party should be a people's party, not a corporate party.
I agree.
If it's not going to be the party for the people, then we're going to have to get a party of our own.
You have to change the name.
I did not cast my vote for Kate Brown in the primaries because of this level of corruption. For Secretary of State, I did not cast my vote for Brad Avakian because of the similar kind of corruption that's going on. You know, I want people that I want politicians that truly represent their people, not corporate interests and not the donations of a few rich people.
So
I couldn't say it any better.
So there have been a couple states so far that have voted or are voting to get rid of superdelegates. I just heard today that
didn't Maine get rid of them?
I think.
Just to be clear, I believe that that's my understanding of that is that they voted to get rid of them going forward,
mm-hmm.
not retroactively, not for
Correct.
This election, but
not
for
this
2020.
Election.
Oh, okay, so it's still in play this time.
It would be for 2020. Yeah. Mm. And I'm from Massachusetts, and we're going to try to do the same thing at our Democratic State Party meeting. I think it's two weeks from Saturday.
Nice.
There's a proposal there, but it wouldn't be for this particular convention. It would be for 4 years from now. Yeah.
So okay, so you're from Massachusetts. Great. I've got another question for you. This one just mind boggles me, and I'm hoping that everybody else is thinking the same thing I am because I can't figure it out.
Yeah.
Senator Warren has almost, other than gun control, she's like a female Bernie, and it just blows my mind that she hasn't endorsed him or spoken out, you know, as an endorsement of Bernie.
Well, I've you know, made phone calls and sent emails, and I share your feelings. You know, Sanders and Clinton were in a virtual tie here in Massachusetts when we had our primary on March 1st.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, Elizabeth Warren could have made the difference.
Yeah,
and, I agree.
She sat on the sidelines. And honestly, it's been frustrating. It's a disappointment. And I'm not making any excuses. I don't know why, except it's politically expedient for her to, you know, be neutral.
It does seem like
there's no such thing as neutral on a moving train.
Yeah.
Yeah, not in this case. I mean, this feels like we are in the midst of a revolution, you know, like metaphorically, it's a battle. It really is. It's David versus Goliath. It's money versus people.
Yeah, it's a battle for the future of our democracy, whether we're going to have democracy or whether we're just going to let go of that ideal.
Right. Yeah. An oligarchy.
So how do things look for tomorrow in Oregon? Everybody's feeling the burn. Has there been a lot of excitement, a lot of talk?
Or you know, everybody's feeling the burn. From everything that everybody that I talk to, I think like two of my entire circle of friends are for Hillary, and every single other person I know is pro-Bernie. I've seen polls where they say for a long time Bernie's been up, you know, like in the 70% range in Oregon. But for the last several weeks I've been seeing, and I think this has to be propaganda, saying that Hillary's ahead here by 8 points, and there's no way that's possible.
No, you get on the phone, you get on the Bernie dialer and you start calling people, and it's, you know, it's about 7 or 8 out of 10 are definitely in support of Bernie.
And you know what's exciting to me, and I'd like to hear from you guys, but I feel like the Sanders campaign has really changed the dialogue that's going on in the workplace, certainly in union environments. Yeah. You know, as a union representative, I get to talk to a lot of workers, and it just feels like there's been a turning point in terms of how people view the union and the issue of labor rights vis-a-vis, you know, growing inequality. And we're getting more support, more participation, more activism.
Yeah.
I'm just feeling a sense of optimism about labor.
Yes.
That I haven't heard in a long time.
Yes. Yes. I think it's Turner. I mean, you've heard for a long time the right has an amazing propaganda machine, and they've just done a great job of smearing and slandering organized labor. You know, they have painted this picture of the corrupt mafia-related people coming in and just destroying the poor businessman. But I really feel like people's eyes have been opened now because they're broke. They're scraping by paying their rent. You know, it's not any wonder that people are like, wait a minute, this trickle-down stuff ain't working.
I think that Bernie has done an amazing job to, I mean, at least as a person who's under the age of 30, to bring the concept of working class, like that term, back into our dialogue.
Yes.
And to sort of inject a class consciousness that has not existed for my entire life prior to this. I think he's done a great job of doing that for younger people.
I think there's a lot of class anger. You know, I canvassed for 2.5 years for Working America, AFL-CIO. And, you know, the unions would be really surprised as heck, you know, when we'd go into these swing districts and we'd be able to tip these neighborhoods because, you know, their polling showed that they swung mostly Republican, you know, but a lot of times, like, I'd go talk to these people and they were pissed off about trade.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they were really pissed off about losing jobs, you know, to other countries, and it wasn't a partisan issue to them, you know. And just to see Bernie Sanders get up there and just explain how all these struggles are connected, you know, I think that that's been a really powerful thing. I mean, to have a political leader that really focuses on the intersections, you know, and can turn out people, I think it's been a really helpful thing.
Yeah, he's built the movement of movements.
What an affirmation, right? Yeah. What an affirmation for what so many of us feel in our hearts and in our guts, you know, about what's wrong. And here finally somebody's broken through the media ceiling, you know, to express what we all feel.
Yeah, he's giving us a language to speak about this.
Well, we got just about 3 minutes left, and I want to talk a little bit with Michael here about some housing ideas that you've had. We talked about it before. Mm-hmm. Sounds like you've made some headway on some stuff here. And just give us an update. Like, how can we help people need homes?
Well, this Thursday, we're having this Thursday afternoon, we're having a meeting to get together. It's a research party to research Airbnb flippers. Basically, what these guys are doing is they're buying up leases all across the city, and they're jacking up the rents 3 or 4 times the monthly rent by doing them as nightly rentals.
Right.
You know, they say, oh, poor as me, poor as me. I have to do this to, you know, get ahead here. You know, if I didn't do this, somebody else would, you know. And at the end of the day, you know, they are the market drivers forcing up the rent. There's around 3,000 homes that have been removed from the housing stock. And, you know, there's about 20, as near as we can tell, of these property management companies we tried to get the city for the last year to investigate them because they're in violation of the city's permit process. And the city hasn't been able to do it because they lost a lawsuit to Uber and Lyft because it's online, it's internet business. They say this is federal commerce. You can't regulate me, right?
Yes.
And that's how the city lost. But what we've been able to prove is that the big guys, the ones that have 3 to 10 houses, that they are they're basically registered as businesses with the state.
So we're
singling them out. Wow. We're going to go after them. We're going to feed the city the information they need to win a lawsuit against Airbnb.
Fantastic.
And we're also, you know, we're also working to combine the strengths of our union's market recovery funds so that we can create down payment assistance for union members so that we can drive up the supply of housing and the wages at the same time. We've recently discovered this thing called the Housing Investment Trust that the AFL-CIO has organized. They've brought together pensions, and that's going to help us hopefully create a real vehicle to build union homes in Oregon.
That's great, right on the heels of the mayoral discussion about the housing crisis here. I mean, at least providing some fuel for that is great.
Yeah. Speaking of housing, I have to put this blurb in here. It's a little bit different related. If you've ever been to Peacock Lane, you love the lights, you love the atmosphere, you love what goes on there. One of the houses on that block sold. The owner now intends to subdivide and turn it into two very different style homes. My friend Heather has a petition going to the mayor to stop this. It would change the feel of the neighborhood. It would change the atmosphere in the holidays.
Yeah.
And just the atmosphere of the neighborhood. You know, if it's important, I'm talking about housing. It's a little bit different than what we were just talking about, but
it's a city institution, though.
It is a city institution, you know, and if you do like something that's going to be the same, something that's brought you happy memories, maybe that's something you can look into. There's a petition on change.org.
Yeah.
You can help to stop this thing from going. Anyways, I can't believe it. Another half hour's gone by. This is
so fast.
This is so fast. But thanks everyone for listening in. Don't forget, you can't mail your ballots anymore. If you haven't sent them in, you have to hand deliver it. Make sure you do that, and we'll see you next time.
To you, the 9-to-5-er, just making your way home. To you, the all-night driver.